He won't tell us anything, insists that everything's okay when people hauled him into the hospital for attempted suicides are not okay.
I can hear you,
Preppy said, coming back inside and grabbing the bag off the floor.
Thanks, kid.
So what are you two arguing about? Ray asked.
Doc's fiance, where is he, by the way?
You mean Brandon? Ray asked. He means Brandon, I said with a smile. And Brandon had to go home.
Oh, yeah? Why is that?
Preppy asked. Because he missed his boyfriend, I said casually.
Oh, okay, because his... Wait, what?
Preppy asked. Ray snorted.
Preppy, Brandon's gay.
We both broke out into a fit of laughter, while Preppy looked at us like we'd lost our damn minds.
Hold the fucking phone. Brandon's gay?
Preppy asked, like he hadn't heard it right the first time. He leaned onto the counter on his elbows.
Fuck. I lost my hair, a portion of my fucking gut, and my gaydar?
Seems so, Ray said, planting a kiss on Preppy's cheek. She may not have noticed him flinch, but I did. I'll check up on you kids. Behave yourselves, she sang as she closed the front door behind her. Don't feel too bad. I missed the signs too when I first met him. I laughed at the memory. I actually thought he was asking me out when I first met him, until we actually went out and his boyfriend met us after the movie. I tried to ignore the thickness of the air around us. I tucked it away in the linen closet, trying to pretend like his every word didn't make me feel something I didn't want to feel. Relief, lust, love. So, back to your earlier question. The kind of man who likes a clean look. That's who doesn't have facial hair.
Oh, yeah?
He asked, taking a step forward, crowding me in, staring down into my eyes with an intensity that had me biting down hard on my lower lip.
Do you like a clean look, Doc? Or do you like it dirty? Beards, tattoos, scars?
Yes, I like it dirty, so dirty. I was stunned into silence. His proximity was fucking with my brain, and I was afraid that at any second I was going to blurt out something that would dig me a deeper hole than I had already dug for myself. I opened my mouth to answer, but I couldn't get the words out. Not like I needed to. Preppy answered for me.
If I remember correctly, you like it dirty. Real fucking dirty.
He took another step toward me.
Remember that first time? In the field? By the train tracks? Remember how I pulled your hair while I fucked you from behind and stretched you open? Remember how it felt to have me moving inside of you? How it felt when you came and screamed in my fucking ear? I do. I remember. Thought of that scream every fucking day since. It was deafening.
He chuckled and pressed his teeth against his bottom lip. He groaned, the sound shooting straight to my pussy.
I can still fucking hear it now.
So can I. The hair on the back of my neck stood on end. What are you doing? I asked, trying to step out from under him. But he moved his arms and pressed his hands against the wall, caging me in. The warmth of his chest radiated onto mine, and I tried to look anywhere but into his eyes, afraid of what I might see. But there wasn't anywhere else to look, especially when his face moved closer to mine. He pressed his knee between my thighs, parting my legs.
Me?
He asked with mock innocence.
I'm just reminiscing with an old friend.
This doesn't feel like just reminiscing, I panted. He stared deeply into my eyes.
No, not yet, it doesn't,
he grinned.
But it fucking will. Soon.
I can't, I stammered. I pulled my face from his hand, but he turned me back by my chin.
Oh, Doc, you remember how much I love it when you tell me no.
He lowered himself until his lips were a hair away from mine. My nipples peaked at the anticipation of feeling his lips against mine.
Maybe, just this once, I lied to myself. One more time just to remember how we felt when we... A car door slammed in the driveway, throwing a bucket of cold water on the sizzling heat between us. Preppy looked up, and I jumped under his arm and away from him, again busying myself with folding towels. I cleared my throat and adjusted my shirt, trying to hide my hardened nipples under my thin tank top. "That would be the realtor," I said as casually as possible.
"Great,"
Preppy said, blowing out a breath. "And when he leaves, we need to talk," I said, trying not to sound affected by him.
"About what?"
Preppy asked. The doorbell rang. I adjusted my hair, and right before I opened the door to let in the realtor and his clients, I turned back to Preppy and swallowed hard. "Our divorce." Dre. We never did have a conversation about a divorce, although we needed to have it at some point. Or maybe an annulment instead. But I was pretty sure if there were time restrictions on those types of things that we'd long surpassed it. We didn't talk about what happened to him either. Or much of anything else, for that matter. It had been a little over a week since Preppy moved in. He rarely came out of Myrna's old room, and I noticed when he did, it was only at night. If he ever was up and about during the day, the first thing he would do was shut the blinds and put his sunglasses on. I knew he was having trouble with light, and I saw at the party what happened to him when the volume of life around him got too loud. There were flashes of the old Preppy from time to time, a snide remark, innuendo about my short skirts, the burning glare of desire in his sad eyes that made my knees weak and my heart want to burst inside my chest. Several times a night he'd scream through his nightmares, and when I tried to go in to help him, I couldn't. The door was always locked. I'd sit in the hallway with my back on the other side of the door and listen to him battle whatever demons he fought off in his dreams until the screams subsided. When I couldn't sleep, I'd fire up my laptop and research conditions of people who'd gone through traumatic situations. Counseling and medication were the two recommendations, although Preppy would never agree to counseling, and self-medicating was more his thing. I signed and bookmarked the page, clicking over to the Logan's Beach Realty site to see if anything else had recently sold in the area, and I was surprised that several homes in need of more repair and priced much higher had recently sold. I made a note to call East if there was something wrong with our listing, especially since the potential buyers the realtor showed the house to never came back with an offer, and there hadn't been a single interested buyer since then. Although part of me was relieved it hadn't sold yet, part of me was frantic to make it happen. With the auction date approaching, time was running out for my dad. I had to think of another creative way to either sell the house or make a substantial amount of money, and fast. "Dad?" I asked when my phone rang. "Dad, is everything okay? It's late."
"Everything is fine here. I was just checking to make sure everything is okay there. Brandon told me what happened with that boy, and I was concerned that..."
He paused, and I heard his guilt dripping into the phone. "You wanted to know if I was using again?"
"Yes,"
my dad answered honestly. "No, Dad, I'm not. I haven't thought about it," I said, and with that statement, I was proud. "Although I had two glasses of wine with a friend the other night, and guess what happened?" I said.
"What?"
"Absolutely nothing," I whispered. "Except maybe a lot of laughter and me falling asleep before 8 p.m. My dad laughed softly.
"I'm so proud of you, Andrea."
I stood up and walked out into the backyard. The cool night air felt like heaven against my damp skin. After I slid the door shut, I turned around and jumped back against the door, dropping my phone.
"Hello?"
I heard my dad saying. I leaned down and picked up the phone. "Hey, Dad, everything is fine, but I have to go. I'll call you back in the morning." I clicked the phone shut and slowly descended the steps. My eyes focused on Preppy, who was sitting in the backyard under the light of the moon, with his face tilted up toward the sky, moaning and rocking from side to side as if he were in pain. Naked. Very, very naked. The brutal red and white scars slashing through his once beautiful tattoos made me want to run my hands over them as if I could heal him. I wanted to weep for him and kill the fucker who did this to him. I stepped around him and crouched down so we were at eye level. His eyes shot open. His bloodshot and unfocused gaze met mine.
Help me.
How do you want me to help you? I whispered. I didn't know what kind of episode he was having. Fuck, I didn't even know if he was awake, so I didn't want to scare him by talking too loud. He reached out and pushed the string of my tank top off my shoulder. His touch made my body shudder. He pushed off the other strap and then tugged at the hem of my skirt.
Please,
he begged softly, but there was nothing sexual about what he was asking. There was no desire in his eyes, only pain. I slowly undressed, pulling down my panties and stepping out of them, before kneeling down before him.
Come here,
he whispered, tugging me by the shoulders until I was straddling him. He was partially hard. Just feeling him against me made me want to throw caution to the wind and put him inside of my body, but this wasn't about me. I wasn't even really sure what it was really about, but whatever it was, he needed it, so I was going to do my best to give it to him. He wrapped his arms around my waist and pressed his head against my naked chest. He breathed in and out slowly, like he was trying to steady himself, and then I realized he was trying not to cry. A few moments later, his shoulders shook. Let go, I whispered, holding him tighter against me. Let it all go. Preppy's shoulders shook harder, and I felt his warm tears against my skin. I felt my own tears start, and once they did, I couldn't stop them. So there we sat, in the backyard, naked, wrapped in each other's arms until the sun came up. I woke up in the grass, covered by a blanket. Preppy was gone. I trudged back up to the house and thought back to when I first met Preppy. I was vulnerable, weak. Everyone in my life had tried to tiptoe around me while they worked their asses off to save me. Not Preppy. It pained me that I had to leave Logan's Beach when the house sold. It broke my heart that Preppy and I could never have a shot at anything real. Not once he learned about the secret I was keeping from him. But I smiled to myself anyway. Because when I was weak, Preppy saved me by giving me his strength.
Chapter 18. Preppy. Did we fuck? I asked Dre, who dropped a fork. I knew we didn't, but I loved getting a reaction out of her. I mean, I don't think we did, but I woke up naked on the porch. Wasn't the first time I've slept outside, but I don't remember actually going out there.
No, we didn't fuck,
Dre said. My dick twitched when she said fuck, and I made a note to make her swear more at me from now on because it was the first sign that my cock wasn't useless after all.
I think you were sleepwalking.
She was irritated, which made me believe that me naked on the porch was more than a simple case of sleepwalking. You have to be nice to me, Doc, I said, scraping a chair against the tile as I pulled it out from the table. I pulled the other one out as well. I sat on one, propping my legs up on the other, crossing my feet at the ankles. I opened her laptop and pulled up the page she had bookmarked and pointed to it. I have postpartum depression, Dre snorted through a burst of laughter, wrinkling her nose. I'm instantly hit with an ache to my balls. But it's not an ache I mind. Not at all. Actually, it's the first even remotely pleasurable sensation in that region of my body I've had since I came back from the brink.
Preppy?
She asked, not waiting for me to answer.
Postpartum depression is what happens to some women after having babies. What I think you mean is something called post-traumatic stress disorder.
I waved her off. Listen, just because I call you doc doesn't mean you're a medical expert, I said. eliciting another small burst of laughter as she rolled and uncovered a ball of dough that had been rising in a bowl on the counter. Besides, it doesn't matter what the fuck it's called. What matters is that I have it. So what I'm saying is that I'll need to be taken care of. Well taken care of.
M'kay?
I asked, and when she flashed me a what-the-fuck-ever look, I stuck out my lower lip in an exaggerated and what I could only imagine was a very pathetic-looking pout.
Oh, yeah? Is that so?
Dre asked, turning around with one hand on her jutted-out hip, one perfectly arched eyebrow craning upward toward her hairline, and her deep red fuckable lips quirked to the side.
And what kind of help is it that you're in so much desperate need of?
I opened my mouth to say my usual something sarcastic, but at the last second I cleared my throat, and even I didn't expect what poured from my lips. My voice was much lower and raspier than a moment before, an almost whisper. All of it. I need all of the help. There was no trace of any kind of humor in my words. What was I even trying to tell her? Dre seemed to be mulling over what I'd just said, her lips flattening into a straight line. She looked over the sink through the window into the neglected backyard. The sun shifted out from behind a cloud, and her face brightened instantly, illuminated by the early morning rays. She paused there for what seemed like a motherfucking eternity, closing her eyes and soaking up the warm light. The clock above the stove ticked louder and louder as it announced each passing second until it turned into tick-ticking insanity pounding within my eardrums. Tick. Tock. Tick. Tock. Finally, Dre broke through my impatience when she turned to me again and wiped her flowery hands on her apron. Her lips turned upward in a bright white full-tooth smile that covered her entire face. My heart sped up like it had been hit with electric paddles, so much so it skipped a beat, and I coughed into the crook of my elbow.
Okay, then.
Okay, then what? I asked, casually looking down at my hands and turning them over as if I was inspecting my own tattoos.
Okay, then if you need help, I'll give it to you.
She paused, and I hadn't realized she'd crossed the kitchen until I looked up from my hands and found her standing over me. So close her knee was pressed against my thigh. I craned my neck to look up at her face.
But my help is conditional.
What kind of conditions? I asked. She stepped away. Why are you pushing me away, Doc? I asked, hating the feeling of space between us. She turned suddenly, her face serious.
Because you hurt me.
Because you fucking destroyed me.
Because when you pushed me away last time, I might as well have died with you. And I went to rehab and school, and there were a million times when I wanted to call you and talk to you and tell you about my day, and I couldn't because you decided that we shouldn't be together. You! Not us! You! Then you fucking died on me, and I fucking hated you for it. All of it.
You're mad at me because I died?
Yes. And because you never knew the truth. There are so many things you need to know that I never told you.
So tell me, Doc, I said. She shook her head. Please. Everyone else spares me from the truth because they're afraid I'll fall apart. That's what's driving me more crazy than any of the other shit. Just tell me the fucking truth.
You might hate me.
I might.
Okay,
she agreed with a small nod. She straightened her spine.
Then come on,
she said, checking the clock on the stove.
We have time to make it.
Where are we going? I asked, confused why this conversation needed a field trip.
To the truth.
Dre.
So that's how this all works?
Preppy asked, pointing to the man at the podium.
You just get up there and tell a shitload of strangers about all your fuck-ups?
My lips curved up into a smile at Preppy's choice of wording. Pretty much. It's supposed to unburden the soul and remind you that you're not alone. You should try it sometime. It's very freeing. I scrunched my nose and thought. Well, not right away, but eventually it feels very freeing, I amended. Sometimes.
Yeah, I get all that, but who the fuck has that much time?
I swatted him with the pamphlet they'd given me on the way in, which is what I assume they give out at most of the NA meetings. A schedule of meetings and a list of people you can call if you feel like using again.
Why are you all the way back here?
Preppy asked in a loud whisper, scooting closer to me in the pew.
Isn't the meeting in the front where all those other people are?
I just don't feel like I need to be up there right now, I explained, although not really explaining anything at all.
I don't get it,
Preppy said, forgetting to whisper. Several heads turned around to see where the commotion was coming from, and I flashed them an apologetic smile, although I really wasn't sorry. Preppy wasn't a conformist. Being quiet, especially in a setting like a church, was a huge undertaking for him. I was actually kind of impressed he wasn't doing cartwheels up and down the aisles. I don't always sit in the back. It just depends on how I'm doing.
I still don't get it, Doc. Use small words if you have to, but explain it to me.
Okay, so like right now, I'm sitting in the back pew by the door, just listening. It's like being back here makes me feel like I'm straddling this invisible line, separating the meeting going on up there and the outside world, which is how I feel most of the time. Like I don't quite belong up there, but I know I need to be here in some way.
What about on other days?
Preppy asked, seeming genuinely interested in what I was about to say. There are some days that are a little harder, I admitted. Days when I'm up there with the others, participating, telling my story, because I feel like the outside world doesn't get it, and I need to be up there with people who do.
How long has it been since you've been up there?
Preppy asked, just as Steve, the meeting leader, called out my name.
Andrea, are you ready?
Steve asked, gesturing to the empty podium with a smile. I nodded to Steve and stood. I'll be up there in about 3 seconds. My heart hammered in my chest as I shuffled sideways out of the pew. I'll understand if you want to leave before I'm done, I added, looking him over one last time. He wanted the truth, and I was about to give it to him in a big way. The biggest way.
I'm not going anywhere,
he reassured me, although there was no way he knew what exactly he was agreeing to. I made my way to the front of the church, where the small wooden podium was positioned directly in front of the pews in the center of the aisle. I looked over the crowd of a dozen or so other men and women, a few teenagers in the crowd, and I took a deep breath. Preppy flashed me one last reassuring smile from the back pew, and I hoped it wouldn't be the last. My name is Andrea, I started, my voice shaky. But everyone calls me Dre. I'm an addict. Heroin was my weapon of choice, if you're interested in knowing. I looked over the crowd. And I've been sober for a few years now. My introduction was met with several hi, Dre's from the crowd and a few claps of encouragement. You know, I've been to 1,000 of these meetings. I've introduced myself to hundreds of others just the same way. I shook my head and cleared my throat. For some reason, stupid reason, I keep expecting this to get easier. The crowd laughed. But telling my story never does. Steve chimed in from the front row.
It may never get easier, but it's a good reminder of why you're here and why you can never go back.
There were more words of encouragement murmured from the small crowd, but it wasn't their reaction that had me holding on to the edges of the podium for support. I cast one last glance to Preppy in the back row. He was partially hidden in the shadows, so I couldn't make out his expression, and in that moment, I was grateful for it. I continued. I've been sober now for several years. I've lost people. I guess that's how this all started. I lost my stepsister, and I blamed myself. Her boyfriend blamed me, too, and we fell into our addictions together. He became violent. He hurt me. He raped me. I told myself I deserved it. In the end, I lost him, too. I took a deep breath and looked down at the podium. I almost killed myself one night. I almost jumped off the water tower right here in Logan's Beach. But I was saved by someone. I wouldn't call him a guardian angel exactly, more like a devil with good timing. After a bunch of other stuff that I won't bore you with, I sobered up and my dad took me back and I checked into rehab. One night, not long after I'd gotten there, I realized how fucking tired I was. Not like sleep tired, but tired of hurting. Because just when I thought my heart couldn't break anymore, it kept shattering over and over again, and after a while, just when I thought I was going to be okay, I couldn't take it anymore. And as an addict, I only knew of one way I could make it all go away. I don't even remember how I managed to escape the rehab facility, or what door or window I snuck out of. All I know is that night, less than an hour after thinking about using again, I was sitting on the dirty floor of some dealer's drug den holding a lighter in one hand and a spoon in the other. I paused. My chest tightened. I fought back the tears that threatened every single time I was about to start on the next part. The most important part. The tears won, and by the time I started speaking, they were falling in warm streams down my cheeks. That night, everything changed in a flash of a second. Before I could tie off my arm, my gut twisted. I thought it could have been the guilt of what I was about to do, and I think it could have been a part of it, but when it passed, I tied off my arm, and just as I lifted the needle to prick my skin, a pain tore through my stomach, and I blacked out. I woke up in the hospital thinking that I'd overdosed. My dad was there, and he told me I didn't have any drugs in my system. He had tears in his eyes when I asked him what was wrong. My voice cracked. He told me he wanted to be the one to tell me himself that I took a deep breath to compose myself. Sorry. He wanted to be the one to tell me the news that I'd lost a baby. My baby, I said, a sob escaping my lips. A baby I didn't even know I was carrying for 15 weeks. A little girl. I loved her the second he told me about her, and I grieved her as hard as any mother can grieve for the loss of a child. When the guilt came again, the overwhelming, maddening guilt, it crashed into me 1,000 times worse than it ever had before, and I realized that she was never fated to make it in this life. If it weren't for those pains, I would have used. And I know in my heart that she wouldn't have made it if I had. Or possibly me as well. That sweet unborn baby, who never stood a chance at taking her first breath, stopped me from making the biggest mistake of my life. She saved my life. After I got out of the hospital, I checked back into rehab and I never touched a needle again. And every time I feel myself sliding down into the abyss, I find comfort in thinking about her. In a way, I like to think that talking about her gives her a new kind of life. Because although it was short, it had so much meaning. She had meaning. I was slipping. I wasn't strong enough to save myself. But it turns out that she was strong enough for the both of us. So now it's my job to be strong for her. I scanned the crowd, and my eyes fell on the motionless shadow in the back row. And I have no intentions of ever letting her down. I left right after my speech, not waiting until the end. I walked down the aisle to find the last row empty. Pain welled in my chest as I told myself that it was expected. There would be no reason for him to stick around after what I'd just said. I knew he'd be angry. I knew he'd hate me for what I'd done, and he had every right to. But he had a right to know, and although I was crushed he wasn't there, a big part of me was glad he finally knew about his daughter. I pushed open the double doors that led to the front room of the church from the chapel, and was about to exit through the front when a voice stopped me.
She was mine?
I turned to find Preppy standing against the wall in the corner, his expression unreadable. I thought you left.
She was mine,
he repeated. I nodded.
Fuck you, he spat. Why didn't you come tell me? Why?
He stopped, pushed off the wall and came to stand in front of me, his eyes rimmed in red as they searched mine for answers. After how we left things, I didn't think you'd really care. And even if you would care, what would be the point? It was too late. There wasn't anything that could be done.
I would have cared, he argued, and I could have been there for you.
I wouldn't have known that, I responded, biting my bottom lip, and I could tell from the shift in his expression that he understood.
You,
he started, his eyebrows furrowed. He glanced down to my stomach in confusion and reached out, placing his flattened palm over the fabric of my dress, then bunching the fabric in his hands. I felt the warmth of his hand through the material of my dress, as if he were touching bare skin.
You were carrying my baby.
His voice almost a whisper. Although it wasn't a question, I nodded, sniffling and shuffling my feet, as he continued to stare at me as if he were seeing me for the first time.
You had to go through that all alone,
he said.
My baby.
I'm so sorry, I said, filling the awkward silence. My body was still recovering and too weak to carry her, and I'm so—
Stop,
Preppy said, holding up a hand. But—
Stop,
he said.
God damn it, Doc. You should have told me. I would have been there for you. I would have come running if I knew you'd just lost our baby. You shouldn't have been alone for that.
I'm just so... My apology was cut short when Preppy descended on me, crushing his lips against mine. I squealed as a surprising bolt of confusion and desire pulsed through my entire body as his kiss grew deeper and more desperate. He lifted me off my feet and swung me around, pushing my back against the wall next to a door marked office. I opened my mouth to him, and when our tongues tangled together, he groaned and used his knee to spread my legs further apart. My dress rode up my thighs, one less layer between us as his hands met my bare ass. A thin strip of wet cotton was all that was left to cover me. Preppy rocked against me, groaning. I gasped into his mouth when I felt his hard cock, huge and ready against my core. I thought... I started, searching his face. The cords in his neck were tight, his face was flushed. Preppy chuckled and spoke against my lips.
I thought too, Doc. I guess my cock was just waiting for the right place and time.
A church during an NA meeting? I asked with a smile, panting as my body responded to his every touch. He rocked against me again, harder this time. My insides clenched, needing him to fill me, wanting him deep inside of me.
If my cock wants to fuck you in a church, then who the fuck am I to argue?
Preppy asked before pressing his lips to mine and continuing the agony of the most passion-filled kiss I'd ever experienced in my life.
I'll take it as a sign from God that I should fuck you right here and now.
What? I asked breathlessly as Preppy dipped one hand between us, pushing my panties aside. The second his fingers connected with my delicate flesh, I bucked off the wall, and Preppy grabbed me tighter by the waist, pulling me in closer, locking me to him.
Shh, gonna fuck you, Doc. Gonna make you come so hard you're gonna drip down my fucking cock,
he said, his voice low and raw, as he circled my aching clit and I writhed for more. Is that what's happening? We're fucking? I asked. Because there is a room full of people in there that will be coming out of those doors in about 10 minutes or so. He stared deep into my eyes.
Doc, I've waited way too long for this. I don't care that it's in a church. I don't care if we have an audience gathered around us. I don't care if the cops show up and try to drag us away because I won't let them. All I care about is this and us. Right now. Right fucking now.
He groaned, inserting a finger inside of me.
Holy fucking shit, Doc. You're tighter than I remember. Holy fucking shit.
Preppy looked around and then back to me.
Here,
he said, reaching for the door handle marked office and carrying me inside the small room.
But only because I know once I get inside that tight fucking pussy that I won't want to come out for a while.
My inside screamed for his words to be reality, and I was embarrassingly wet, dripping down my inner thighs. Inside the room was small. A few computers lined one of the walls with a desk in the middle and a small couch on either side. At one of the computers, sitting in the dark, was a portly guy around his early 30s with a shaved head. When we barged into the room, he stood up abruptly, knocking over a chair as Preppy set me down, but didn't let me get too far. He held me close to his side.
Get out,
Preppy instructed the man.
Hey, you guys can't be in here,
he said, pulling up his dress slacks, which were already well above his belly button, and fumbling to close his zipper.
Get out now, or before the pastor finds out that his assistant pastor was in here looking at porn during church hours,
Preppy warned, nodding to where a naked, busty blonde was laying spread eagle on the screen of the computer the man had just been sitting at.
Preppy? Is that you?
The man said, adjusting his glasses and taking a step closer.
You know, I heard that you were back, but I didn't... Out, now. We'll catch up later.
Preppy asked with a certain amount of pleading in his demand.
Oh, yeah, of course, man,
he said, gathering up some papers from the desk. He tossed Preppy a set of keys on his way out the door.
Lock up and put the key in the donation bin outside the door. Good to see you, Preppy,
he called back, sounding both cheerful and a little bit afraid as the door clicked shut. Preppy checked to make sure the door was shut, but there was no lock to turn, which explains why the assistant minister hadn't locked it either. Preppy wasted no time bringing my mouth back to his. He reached under my dress and pulled down my panties, which I stepped out of. He backed me deeper into the room as I fumbled for his belt. Grabbing him in my hand, I gave his hot flesh a squeeze, and his head fell back against the wall. His eyes closed. I squeezed again, and he pushed my hand away, letting his pants drop to the floor. I went down to my knees, wanting to taste what was dripping down the tip of his glorious cock, when he grabbed me by the elbows and kept me upright.
I want your mouth, Doc. I want all of you, but it's been too fucking long, and I just need to be inside of you, right fucking now.
I just wanted to taste you, I admitted, biting my bottom lip.
Ugh, don't say shit like that. I want to last more than a minute,
he said, pulling me against him and kissing me until we were both groaning and writhing against one another. His fingers found my wetness and parted my folds. First one, then another finger slowly entered me, and I felt like as if I were going to combust. Heat, pleasure, sparks, and so much more pinged around in my body, turning every pleasure sense I had on high alert. I was alive with anticipation. A need rose inside me so fierce, Preppy had me begging him with each stroke of his fingers. Preppy, I begged, needing more. Hearing the desperation in my voice and feeling it in my humming body, he picked me up and pushed me against the arm of the couch. He pushed open my thighs, fisted his cock, and lined himself up with my opening. He pushed inside just half an inch, and then he paused. I looked up to find him staring at me.
I can't believe this is really happening. It's you,
he said, repeating the words from the first time we saw each other again. It's me, I breathed, holding on to the sides of his face as he thrust the rest of the way inside of me. I cried out, not knowing who was around and not caring who heard. The fullness was shredding me open on the inside in the most delicious way. Pain only led to pleasure, especially when Preppy spoke, his words fanning the flames of the fire that was already burning volcano hot.
Fuck, Doc. You're so fucking tight. Holy shit. Your fucking pussy is so tight it almost hurts. How is this possible? Oh!
He cried out, closing his eyes tight.
You feel so fucking good. Better than I remember. Fucking perfect.
No one, since you, I admitted, the pleasure and emotions crashing into me so hard, tears again dripped from the corners of my eyes as I struggled to maintain a hold on it all. His eyes shot open and met mine as he smiled, his eyes half-hooded when our eyes met. He reached down and lifted my dress above my breasts and leaned over me, pushing me back further onto the couch, bringing my knees up against his chest as he gave me every inch of his big cock, pushing inside of me in long, hard strokes. The way he pulled out brushed my tender bundle of nerves just inside my pussy and sent sparks up my spine. Over and over again the sparks ignited until my entire body was on fire, an inferno of need ready to combust. Preppy picked up his speed.
You're so fucking close, I feel it. Kiss me. Kiss me when you fucking come.
Our lips met, and I closed my eyes on instinct, lost in sensation.
Open your eyes, he demanded. Kiss me and look at me when you come. I want you to see me, he said.
Three more thrusts. I lifted up my hips as much as I could in my position, to take as much of him as I could. With my eyes open and my lips on his, the fire burned out of control. Shooting down my spine, my entire body contracted and spasmed in one endless burst of pleasure that had me screaming into Preppy's mouth. I was still riding my orgasm by writhing on his cock when he stilled and our lips separated as he growled through his own release. Hot streams spilled inside of me, his cock pulsing for what seemed like minutes. Even after he pulled himself from me a minute later, spurts of white were still dripping from the tip, falling onto my clit.
Holy fucking shit,
Preppy said, trying to catch his breath. I laid there, at an awkward angle on the side of the couch, staring at a cross painted on the low ceiling of the office. My limbs jello as I tried to remember how to breathe, or even sit up, or even my own fucking name. Yeah, I agreed. I mean, it was okay. Preppy chuckled and fell on top of me, clutching my face in his hands.
Hey, Doc?
He asked, searching my eyes. His laugh quieted and his smile fell. My stomach flipped. Yeah?
This time, I'm gonna keep you.
Don't make promises you can't keep, I said. He looked into my eyes and stroked my cheek.
I'm gonna try my fucking hardest to keep you.
Chapter 19. Preppy. We were still in bed when I turned to Doc. Her hair was a mess, sticking out a million ways from her head. Her red lipstick was smeared all over her cheeks. She was fucking gorgeous. I pulled her leg so her thigh was resting over mine.
What did you do before, you know, to de-stress, for fun?
Doc asked, twirling a shiny lock of her hair between her fingers. Of course, the first thing that came to my mind was fucking, although fucking anyone other than her was more like a chore, a struggle in trying not to hurt anyone while trying to take some sort of pleasure out of the situation. Until Dre, I'd failed at it. I'd failed a lot. Still, I must have had that dirty look in my eye.
Other than that,
she said, nudging my shoulder.
What's something you haven't done in a while? Something we can do together? Right now.
A smile crept onto my face, and I smiled at my girl like a fool as one thing came to mind that always made me feel better once I'd done it. There is one thing. My smile grew even bigger. Tell me, Doc. I leaned in close. How do you feel about misdemeanors?
They have their uses.
Come on. I'll show you how much fun those uses can be. 20 minutes later, we were standing in front of the Stop and Shop in the shadows, where the one overhead light in the parking lot couldn't reach. We had a full view of the heavily pimpled man-child working the counter, but there was no way he could see us. On the count of three, I said. One?
Wait, why are we doing this again?
Dre asked with a giggle that made my balls tighten. Because revenge is sweet and bullying is wrong. Don't you read the papers? These people need to be taught a lesson for future generations.
He bullied you?
She asked, sounding as if he'd also kicked her puppy. Yep, used to kick my ass all the time in grade school. You know, I won, though, but it was still super annoying.
That fucker.
Exactly. So are we going to do this or what, Doc? If you're in, it's pick up that pretty skirt and grab your balls. Are you in or are you out? She didn't hesitate.
Oh, I'm in all right.
Dre raised her arm in launch position and tipped her chin to me.
Ready.
I started the countdown. 1, 2, 3. On three, we both threw as hard as we can, not stopping until the 2 dozen eggs in the carton were all gone and smashed against the window.
It's fucking beautiful,
Dre said, admiring the smears and drips of liquid yolk sliding down the glass. The lights from inside the store gave what we did a backlit effect, making it look as if the window was glowing. We should probably run, I suggested, hearing the ding of the front door and the stomp of angry steps across the pavement.
Sure, where do you want to go now?
No, we should run, I yelled, grabbing her arm and dragging her with me until she realized that Tyler was right behind us, as well as blue and red lights of a patrol car that had just skid into the parking lot.
Shit,
Dre squealed, sounding more delighted than one should when the possibility of being cuffed in the back of a squad car by the end of the night was pretty fucking high. This way, I said, leading her over the chain-link fence in the back of the store and then down the path that twisted through a wooded area and ended up across the road from my house. We darted over dead plants and tree roots, my memory of the path I used to know so well the only thing guiding us forward on the dark path. Dre squealed again when we heard the sound of the fence rattling. A mini-tunnel of brightness darted from side to side ahead of us, courtesy of a strong-ass cop flashlight. Stop! You're under arrest! Ordered the officer chasing us.
If we keep going this way, he's going to catch up to us. We need a better plan,
Dre pointed out. She was right. I wasn't the only one who knew the path, but suddenly, like an idea bulb growing bright, a light came into view in the distance from a house that definitely didn't exist last time I was in these woods. Laughter and soft rock music filled the air, a clink of glasses, a splashing of water, the smell of meat on a grill. It seemed as if someone was having a barbecue, and those someones were about to have 2 new best friends. Come on, I said, hopping over the little white picket fence lining the backyard. As we ran toward the back of the house, I realized it wasn't a barbecue as much as a couple. 2 men sitting in a small hot tub on their back deck, drinking red wine while a closed grill smoked just a few feet away. The outdoor table was set for 4, complete with plates and glasses, as if they were expecting more company.
What the hell are you?
Dre started to ask as I stripped off my clothes. Take off your clothes, I told her. Now.
Who the hell are you?
The younger man of the 2 asked, standing up in the water to reveal the smallest Speedos no man should ever be subjected to seeing in his lifetime. The other man, a silver-haired older gentleman, looked mildly amused and very, very high. They must have smoked earlier because although the source of it wasn't laying around, the light smell of weed still lingered in the air. We, gentlemen, are your company for the night, I announced. And we've been here all day, I added. Glancing back into the woods, the beam of the light was growing closer. I'm Samuel, and this is my wife, Dre. Dre gave them a small wave as she continued to undress. She added one of her famous huge red-lipped smiles, too, although I was sure it wasn't as effective on them as it always seemed to be on me. I grabbed the bottle of wine from the ledge on the side of the tub and poured it into the 2 empty glasses lining the place settings. Dre kicked off her shoes until she was only in her underwear and bra. She picked up her clothes and mine and tossed them into the open kitchen window. The men watched her with confused expressions on their faces. The man who was standing slowly sank back down into the bubbling water. And if you play along with what's about to happen, I'll give you a 6-month supply of the best weed you can get your hands on in all of Logan's Beach. The older man seemed to be thinking over my offer, although I'd wished he'd think it over faster. Much faster.
That would be good, because the stuff I bought today across the bridge was, how you say, shit,
he said with a very heavy Spanish accent. I stepped into the hot tub in only my boxers, my legs having no choice but to brush against the Speedo man in the small tub. I handed Dre her glass of wine and helped her into the tub next to me. I grabbed a handful of water and wet my hair before wrapping my arm around Dre's shoulders and pulling her close to my side. "I'm Fred, and that sexy gentleman is Meryl," Fred announced before playfully swatting Meryl on the shoulder. "And you said we should have built in Miami because there is no excitement in Logan's Beach." He held his glass up in our direction and then gasped with whispered delight when the officer hopped the back fence and started heading our way. "How much more excitement do you need?" he said, behind his hand as if the officer could read lips in the dark. By the time the officer got to us, out of breath with leaves and twigs stuck all over his dark blue uniform, the four of us were in full fake conversation, laughing and clinking our glasses together like old friends.
"Is this the friend you said was joining us?" Dre asked. She turned to the officer. "Did you bring more wine?"
She downed her glass.
"'Cause this is good stuff."
"You always did have a taste for the expensive," Fred teased, sounding like a natural-born actor. "What can we do for you, Officer Beeman?" he asked with a flirty tone, cocking his head to the side to read his badge. "You too," Beeman said, pointing from me to Dre. "Out of there right now. You're under arrest for vandalism, evading an officer of the law." "I think you're mistaken, sir," I said. "You've got the wrong people. We've been here for hours with our friends having a good time." "We did hear some rustling in the brush, though, so you might want to check the woods." I smiled and took a sip of my wine, which was actually pretty fucking good considering I didn't know shit about wine. "Don't make me add more charges to the list," the officer warned, placing his hand over his gun and playfully tapping his fingers over the strap buttoned over the holster. "Like failure to cooperate with an investigation, and..."
"Wait just a second, officer. These are our guests in our home, and they've been here all night like they said. Now move on and keep searching for who you're mistaking them for,"
Fred argued. Beeman shook his head and didn't take his eyes from me as he said, "I am not mistaking anything, sir. Now you two, get the fuck out of there and come with me, or I'll..." He flicked the strap on his holster open. This single move pissed me off to the point that my vision blurred with anger. Normally, as if anything were ever fucking normal, this little show of power would be the trigger setting me off into a rage that ended up with me calling smoke for a body cleanup. But I didn't want to put Dre in any sort of danger. I couldn't. It was only a misdemeanor. What the hell? Score. Preppy. 78,903,948,098. Law. 1. I guess I could go with him this once. I was about to set my wine glass down and do as he said when Meryl stood up. The water beaded on his chest and slid down over his curly gray chest hair, landing in a puddle over his pot belly which hid whatever Speedo he was wearing. God, I hoped he was wearing a Speedo.
"Let me ask you a little something. Did you see these two commit the crime you are accusing them of?"
Meryl asked sternly, taking a very professional stance as if he weren't mostly naked. Or possibly naked. Shit, he was most definitely naked. The officer sighed in frustration.
"No, but we saw them running and got a call. Running isn't illegal," he argued. "If it were them, that is. Which it most certainly was not."
Officer Beeman opened his mouth to protest, but Meryl cut him off.
"Furthermore, officer,"
Meryl stressed the word officer,
"this is private property where I am entertaining guests, and you, having not witnessed whatever the crime is in question, have no legal right to be on my property. If you feel the need to come back, or think you have valid legal reason to do so, you are welcome to come back with a warrant, or else my office will be dealing with you, and believe me, that they will rain down the wrath of an angry old man 6 months from retirement, trying to enjoy his vacation, the likes of which you have never seen."
Meryl reached toward the table, plucked his wallet from his jeans, and handed the officer a card. I was downright shocked when Officer Beeman's eyes went wide and he tipped his hat to Meryl, offering his apologies. "So sorry to have disturbed your party, sir." We were just about home free. The cop was walking back toward the fence when a kid a few years younger than me came bursting through the house onto the back deck. He didn't glance up from the bags in his hands, just set them on the table and began to rummage through them. The cop stopped to take notice of the kid.
Pops, they didn't have the kind you wanted, but they had this other brand with the state of Florida on it. It's slim pickings in the stores in this podunk town, so you'll have to deal with the cigarettes I could find. Fred, do you guys have any...
The kid stopped mid-sentence when he realized that Fred and Merrill weren't alone. His eyes landed on Dre, and then me, as he stood frozen in shock.
Hey, kid,
Beeman called out. The kid's head snapped to the officer.
Yeah?
He asked, holding his hands in the air as if he were under arrest. Fuck, Fred muttered.
You been here all day?
Yeah, sure have,
the kid answered. Fuck. It was my turn to mutter.
Those two been here all day?
He asked, looking downright triumphant as he pointed to me and Doc. She squeezed my arm.
Yeah, man, it's been a party up in here,
the kid responded without skipping a beat. He laughed like a stoner in a movie would and lit a cigarette.
I just made a smoke run.
Tell me, if they've been here all day, what are their names?
The kid smiled and tapped on his head with his open palm, as if he were trying to will out a memory of an introduction that never took place.
Ah, man, I didn't catch the girl's name. First time I met her was tonight, and I've had a lot of beers.
He turned to Dre.
Sorry, I'm not real good with names.
All right, then, what's his name?
The officer asked, pointing to me. Fred sat up straight, and Merrill was about to interject as the kid scratched his head and yawned like he was questioned by police on a daily basis, and the entire thing was boring him to death. I think I almost drowned when he said,
Oh, him? That's Preppy, but don't fucking ask me what his real name is, 'cause I don't fucking know. Everyone just calls him Preppy or Prep. Is this some sort of weird test?
He took a seat at the patio table.
Am I on a hidden camera show?
He ducked his head and inspected the inside of the open table umbrella. By the time he'd pulled his head out, the officer was gone.
Holy fuck, Fred exclaimed. That was fucking great.
Why was he so scared of you?
Dre asked Merrill. Merrill smiled and took a deep drag of his cigar, blowing smoke rings into the air.
I'm the fucking state attorney,
he said, and everyone broke out into a fit of laughter. Everyone, that is, except me and the kid.
Our newest accomplice here is Kevin,
Fred introduced.
How do you know my name?
I asked Kevin, holding off on joining Fred, Merrill, and Dre in the toast they were sharing because of a nagging in the back of my brain that told me there was something about this kid. Something familiar. Kevin took a drag of his cigarette and shrugged nonchalantly.
I just know it,
he said with a shrug of his shoulders. He ashed his cigarette directly into the center of the spa. All eyes turned to him, and Dre gasped like she was realizing something I hadn't.
Maybe on the account of you being my brother and all.
Dre went stiff beside me.
There's no fucking way you can be my brother. I don't even know who my old man is.
Neither the fuck do I. But you know that cunt of a mother you got?
Unfortunately.
Well, it's the same cunt of a mother I got.
Chapter 20. Dre. Do you think he's telling the truth? I asked Preppy as I washed my hands in the kitchen sink.
Probably. Don't see why anyone would lie about having her as their mother.
He pressed his nose against the back of my neck and inhaled. I broke out in goosebumps.
I think it's cute that you put the cookies outside on the deck to cool,
Preppy said, coming up behind me and pressing his body into mine. That's the way Myrna always did it, and it's her recipe. Gotta do it right or it's not worth doing.
Another lesson learned in rehab?
No, I think that one was from American Ninja Warrior.
Really?
Preppy asked, excitedly pulling me tighter against him. I laughed and shook my head. No, I exclaimed, swatting at him with the dish towel in my hand, then giving it one last rinse before laying it over the neck of the faucet.
Look at you being all domestic. You're like the lady on that show. What was it called? Leave It to My Beaver?
That would be Leave It to Beaver, I corrected.
Shit, you're right. Leave It to My Beaver must have been the porn parody.
Preppy brushed the hair off my shoulder and pressed his lips against the curve where my neck and shoulder met, trailing them across my prickled skin to the special place behind my ear that caused me to press my ass back into him, and the hardness prodding at my lower back. I tilted my head.